Hello and welcome to Corgitown USA podcast. We are glad to have you. This is our 100th episode.
100.
We need to have a party.
We do need to have a party. I think we should party like the rock stars that we are.
Like the little corgi rock stars?
Like the little corgi rock stars.
Yeah. Well, I'm Candy. In my lap is Chuckles, our spokes corg.
And I'm Catherine. And over on the side of me is my little spokes corg, Digby, and hanging out somewhere around here. Well, there's Booger.
Booger. And trying to ward off Digby's advances.
Yes.
She's setting up boundaries. And then there's Mortimer Barnabas. And if you've been with us this far, thank you so much. We are so grateful to be here to be able to do the 100th episode. And we took a little bit longer of a break in between seasons, one to prepare for 100th episode, but also, we had to say goodbye to my hammer. He was a member of the Corgi committee. He had DM. We had been, taking the DM journey for about 2 years and we had to say goodbye. So we have taken some time off to grieve, and try to heal our hearts so that we could come back to you and bring to you very important content. Since this is the 100th episode, we had to get a very special honored guest.
Indeed.
Yes. So if you follow Queen's Best Stumpy Dog Rescue, and we hope that you do, you should if you don't, you're probably familiar in the corgi community, but we have Susan Long today.
That is quite the honor because I know how long you two have been planning on doing this.
Well, she takes care of a lot of special needs corgis. Let's bring her on.
Yes.
Susan, welcome, honored guest. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you,
Susan. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
So great to be here.
10-year anniversary, right?
10 years, yeah. Going 2024 is going to be our 11th year.
Wow.
It's amazing. So amazing. And I want to say, we just said goodbye to Hammer. If it weren't for Queen's Best, I wouldn't have Hammer. He did not come through your rescue, but he was a Craigslist posting back in 2014. And you guys had found it. Oh, there's a Craigslist. It was posted on your page. Somebody needs to go get this cutie. So I reached out to the owner. The guy was living in a van. I don't know what happened in his situation. At some point, he'd had a house and a yard, and he didn't know any better. He thought Craigslist, somebody will find him. And of course, we know what happens with Craigslist postings. Kind of dangerous stuff. But I went out and I met him, and he said, "Oh, he's a shy dog. I don't know if he'll like you." And I got down and I said, "Hammer." And he came right up to me, and the guy's jaw dropped, and he said, "He doesn't walk up to anybody like that." And I'm tears. I'm like, "It's because he knows I'm his mama." I'm just like a total mess. But I'm grateful for so many reasons for what you guys do. But I wouldn't have had Hammer if it weren't for your organization, because I would have never saw that posting.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for saving him and giving him a life. And I'm so sorry for your loss.
Oh, thank you. It's pretty raw still. It was, you know, it's only been a couple months, but yeah, or not even quite a couple months, like 6 weeks.
Barely a month.
Yeah. So, but we're adjusting. Let's talk about Queen's Best. So I would love to hear, I know this is a very heartfelt story. And if you want to tell us a little bit about Queen's Best for those who don't know, I feel like most of our audience knows about what you do, but if you want to give us kind of a little synopsis and then about how you got started.
Yeah, so Queen's Best Stumpy Dog Rescue, we started back in 2013. The focus was to be there for the corgs that needed us the most. So those with medical issues, behavioral issues. We started out mostly with medical issues. And so it was a lot of special needs dogs that had things like cancer, terminal illnesses. And it was important to me that these dogs had the opportunity to have a bucket list. And so we started out with that, the mission of helping the dogs that needed us the most. The ones that were the seniors with the medical issues, and then the behavioral issues that were really misunderstood. So over the course of, 10 years, it's been starting with the seniors and the special needs medical issues, and it sort of kind of transitioned into younger dogs with behavioral issues now. And so through the years, through my own experiences with my own dogs too, I've learned about dog behavior and then went deeper into learning about dog psychology. And so the great focus now is on really kind of helping people understand their dogs a little bit more and understand why they're doing what they're doing, that they're not bad dogs, that you're not bad dog owners either, that we're just doing the best that we all can with the information that we have. So the focus now is holding workshops and trainings to try to keep families together, and making sure families don't feel like they're in a place of having to give their dogs up. So when I speak about that, oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, that's wonderful. That's amazing.
Yeah, we love that you're doing that.
Thank you. It comes from a place of really understanding where families are coming from too. My boy, Wally, he was my very, very first corgi. And he's the one that took me through the ringer. They literally took me through the ringer. I mean, I cried almost every other day because of him. And when we brought in our second dog, he was attacking him. And I mean, blood drawing attacks every other day. And everyone in our lives were telling us, you have to get rid of your dogs. And for me, these are my kids. I'm never getting rid of my dogs. You know, it's like stepbrother and stepbrother came together. They're having issues right now. So me as mom, what do we need to do at home to fix things? And that was the approach. And it took a long time, but it took changing the way I did things and the way I approached them and honoring them as dogs and not treating them so much like human kids the way I had originally treated them. And it took 2 years, but they became best friends. And then from there, adopted Eva, who is our third corgi, and she came in with a bite history from the shelter. And at the time, very misunderstood. We were told that she was vicious and she was aggressive and that family's children's lives were in danger. Those were their exact words.
Wow.
And at the time, you know, it was like, okay, well, clearly something's not being fulfilled in her. In the end, she ended up being the most amazing girl with exercise, with rules, with some boundaries. And at the time, I was a dog walker and a pet sitter. So I was able to give her lots of exercise. And as time went on, started seeing more and more that older corgis and those with medical issues and behavioral issues didn't have anywhere to go. We currently now still work very closely with the Pembroke Welsh Corgi Club of Southern California. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they have a very strict policy of what dogs they take in and don't take in. And the dogs that they were not taking in were the ones that really needed a place. And so that's sort of how Queen's Best Stuffy Dog Rescue was born.
Gosh, I can't express enough how grateful I am that you do this. It takes a special person. And it's, I'm an obedience trainer. It just, you know, we work on basic manners, but the behavioral stuff, and I can say you see it way more even than I do, but so often, be it poor breeding practices, poor research, poor et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so many of these dogs, the shelters and rescues will take the adoptable ones because they know that they can put them somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
So traditionally there's not a place for the ones with behavioral issues or medical issues or seniors. There's no place for them to go.
Yeah.
So
absolutely
incredible. So and we try to hear what we try to do is educate people. Is a corgi right for you? They've grown in popularity. My first corgi, people didn't know what kind of dog he was. They always had to ask me, and you would say a corgi and they say, what? Had no idea. And then social media grew them in popularity. And now we have the paparazzi where you can't go anywhere without people saying, oh my gosh, you have a corgi, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was all because of that. Like they didn't have anywhere to go. And we went the route of starting as a foster-based rescue. And don't get me wrong, we still need fosters. But in that experience of having fosters, there were so many times where fosters would return the dog saying, well, they're too much work. Well, they're doing this and they're doing that and they're peeing on things and they're chewing on things and not following the rules that were set up for them to be able to set the dogs up for success. And so here again is a situation where the dogs are being blamed as the ones that were being bad or being misbehaved when it's the people that are not choosing to follow the rules or to not give them what they need. You know, crate training is such a very simple thing and it's something that would prevent the dogs from peeing and destroying things when you're not watching them. But it also fulfills their need as a den animal. But if somebody is not doing that for them, the dog gets blamed, the dog gets returned, the dog gets dropped off at the shelter. Out here, out in the desert, the high desert, dogs get dumped out in the middle of the street. So there's just too many moments of where the dogs are constantly being blamed. And for me, that drives me up the wall. I really want everybody to understand that there are no bad dogs. There are just bad dog owners that choose to not do things for the dogs.
Very true.
And, you know, that's what we get to change.
Yeah.
And as people need to adjust their expectations. It's like you said, mm-hmm. we love them as human children, but we mm-hmm. can't expect them to have the same instinct that we do because they're a different species.
Absolutely. So with that, what I like to say is we can love them like human children in the sense of being dedicated and committed to them as human children. Like I would never think of giving up my child. And no. So for me, the dogs are literally furry autistic children. They cannot verbally communicate with you. They can only react. And it is up to us to understand why they're reacting the way they do and to adjust our actions with them to modify their behaviors. And it all starts with us. It starts with us changing the way we do things. It starts with us changing our expectations. As well as understanding by working with the behaviorist and working to understand why is my dog doing this? Let me understand why they're talking to me in dog because they're dogs. But this whole time I'm speaking to them in English. I'm talking to them as human beings and expecting them to understand me.
Right.
Yes. And that it's something that I'm still learning. I have Candy. I have Eric. Who
I think I've been training you more than I've been training Digby.
Well, that's it. And it both you and Eric.
That's
have been
what
training.
It is.
But I understand that. I understand what a not great dog parent I am. I've always had cats.
I wouldn't say that.
I'm not where I aspire to be.
You've had to adjust your understanding.
And
you're still practicing.
And I'm still practicing. Please recognize, for those listening to this, recognize that it's you. It's not the dog. It's you. And that was a hard pill for me to swallow because I've, you know, as our listeners know, anybody who's listened to this show before, I've always been a cat person. I've had dogs in my life, and I've been a cat person. And it's a huge adjustment. It's a huge adjustment. It's a huge, hugely different way of interacting, of working with Digby's behavior. He's a little guy with a lot of bite to him. We have a bigger dog now that Digby will sometimes get into fights with, and then sometimes just be this loving brofer. And it's up to me.
And he's a rescue. Too.
He's a rescue. Yeah. And it's both, you know, both Candy and Eric. Eric trained dogs and did dog agility and all that stuff. And both of them are working with me. So I really want to emphasize what you said, Susan. It's you, the human. Figure that out for yourself. And if you're not willing to work on yourself as the human, don't bring a dog into your life. It's just not, you're absolutely right. I said earlier, off camera, I put up my Splooters Stumpy Dog calendar.
Yes. Queen's Best has a new calendar. Go to the website, please.
Go to the website, buy the calendar. It is so adorable. And it's heartbreaking, to know that it's the human in their life. That may have not done them right.
Well, and didn't understand. It's usually good intentions are there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
definitely. Like I said, I can totally understand from an owner perspective what it was like not knowing what the hell I was doing.
Yes.
I had no clue what I was doing when I got Wally. And, you know, at the time when Wally is my one and only dog I ever got from a breeder. And this was after attempting to rescue and not being able to adopt because at the time our local breed club did not adopt out to first time dog owners. And I didn't understand it. I took it so personally. Hmm. And then as time goes by, it's like, oh, this is why. Every single behavioral issue that we could have imagined occurred. And it was because I went in as total dog lover, wanting to have a surrogate furry child and let him run the house. And my understanding and my perception of love towards a dog was give him as much freedom as possible. Dogs are happy when they have all the space to run around and do whatever the heck they want. That might be the case for a, you know, cupcake family dog that doesn't work, but we have working dogs that need a person that is going to be their shepherd, as well as their, you know, trusted and respected authority figure in a human world, because they're not on the field running after the sheep and cattle anymore.
No.
They're in our homes running after the two-legged people that are walking around instead. Mm-hmm. They are in a human world running after the bicycles and the skateboards and the buses and the cars, the things that are moving the way sheep and cattle do, because their instincts tell them to do so. But when we think about it from a dog owner perspective, not a working dog perspective, we're like, well, why is my dog chasing after the car? Why is my dog chasing after the bicycle? Why are they lunging after the skateboarder? You know, like, why do they keep doing that? They're being bad. They're being bad. They're embarrassing me. Your dog is doing what they were bred to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, let's break down that understanding. Let's help you understand why they're doing that. Let's help you understand how to give them an outlet to release that energy. More importantly, let's show you and give you the tools on how to bring them back down to a calm state of mind, get their focus back onto you, and then you give them the directions of leave it, ignore that, don't chase after that, stay by my side instead. Mm-hmm. Go into place and lay down and relax, calm that brain down.
Yeah.
That all starts with us.
Yeah.
Everything training is all about coaching the people on what to do, coaching the people on how to change things at home. And once you change your habits and your understanding of why you're even doing those things to begin with, that's when the real change starts to happen.
Yeah, I've learned that as I've been training more and more, that's 100% what you said. And I've noticed it's hard sometimes for humans to turn their perspective. I don't know why he does that. Why does he keep doing that? I tell him not to do that and he keeps doing that. Well, he's not your spouse. He's not your child. He might be your child, but he's not your human child. He's not going to understand that you said, stop chasing that car. Like, that's annoying. Don't do that. No, you have to shift that perspective to put yourself in their paws. They have a completely different. Yeah, you are 100% correct. But can you tell us, I mean, this is an insurmountable answer that could happen from this question, but what are your biggest challenges with your rescue, running your rescue?
I know. All over the place. I know. It really does.
I didn't really make it succinct. Lately, what's the biggest challenge?
Lately is having enough help for the dogs.
Yeah.
You know, we're on a 2.5 acre sanctuary out in Acton, which, you know, is an amazing place for the dogs, but we're about an hour north of Los Angeles, northeast of Los Angeles, and getting enough help up here to make sure that we have the assistance with the groundskeeping and the exercising and the grooming and all of that stuff is probably the biggest challenge.
Because you also have to have people that have the sensitivity of what they're dealing with. It's not just, oh, I want to help. Yes. But do you also understand what's entailed?
Yeah. What you're walking into. We do get a lot of times where, you know, there's interest in volunteering. And I think the perception of volunteering means I'm going to go to the Corgi Ranch and I'm going to cuddle with dogs all day. Like, no, that's not actually how it works. We have a majority of our dogs here, about 80% of the dogs at the ranch have a bite history. They are here for training, which means starting with helping them shift their perspective and their relationship with human beings, which means giving volunteers and making sure volunteers are trained to be able to handle our dogs as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and then of course there's work. You gotta pick a poop, clean kennels, do laundry, brush dogs. You know, I'm very fortunate that we have an amazing team of volunteers, but our volunteers are tired too. Our volunteers are burnt out. And we've had some big losses. We had our volunteer coordinator who recently just moved out of state. So that was a huge loss to us. And we have, you know, another volunteer who religiously came up every single weekend to brush dogs, literally did nothing but brush and walk dogs, and began to encounter health problems himself and has not been able to come, you know, and then of course that the pandemic hit. So it's been hard.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for what you do. Wish I were closer, can help more. But Yeah, but we'll definitely, if you, dear viewer, dear listener, if you are nearby in that area and think that you have what it takes, please step forward. Maybe we can help get you some help. I do want to ask you, so myositis, we wanted to talk about this a little bit. Can you help educate us?
Yeah, so I brought up myositis because part of the reason why I'm so passionate about what I do is because of the impact that dogs have had in my life. I was diagnosed with juvenile polymyositis when I was 7 and was in and out of the hospital since then. And I currently am still going through treatment. And it's something that is extremely rare, does not have a cure. And it was something that took me to very dark places in my life. And as a teenager, while I was in the hospital during some of those really dark moments, the thing that got me through were therapy dogs. And so over time, you know, in seeing the dogs that have medical issues and these behavioral issues and whatnot, there was a part of me that really connected with that in seeing that they needed exactly what I needed as a child. And the nurses and doctors gave that to me, and they are ever so deserving of it. So why are we not giving that to them? So that's an additional push as to why I feel so passionately about it, you know, and they deserve everything we can give them. And through the course of the rescue, you know, 7 years into the rescue, we ended up rescuing a little lady named Miss Wanda. And she came from the Oakland shelter in Northern California and she came to us with a host of issues. She was diagnosed with megaesophagus. And so her esophagus wasn't working to be able to swallow food and water properly. So she was constantly regurgitating and vomiting. Mm-hmm. She had exercise intolerance, was really tired all the time, weak all the time. And in doing more and more research and getting, you know, diagnostics done, we saw that she had an elevated CK level. And all of these things were starting to come together. Like, what? Dogs don't usually end up with an elevated CK level unless there's something going on with muscles, because that's how my disease works. Diving deeper into it, found that dermatomyositis, which is a cousin, it's in the family of myositises or myopathies, is a confirmed hereditary condition in Pembroke Welsh Corgis.
Oh.
So we had Miss Wanda, who actually came to us with the end stage of dermatomyositis and had all of the symptoms of the difficulty swallowing, muscle weakness, elevated CK, and skin issues. And so she was losing fur. And it was, what are the odds of a dog that has a condition that is a cousin of my condition that ends up in our care? Knew exactly what needed to be done for her, gave her what we could, gave her a bucket list, and then we were able to help her cause. So myositis, because it hits so close to home for me, and obviously, you know, it's something that is in corgis. It's in Pembroke Welsh corgis. And with the way the breed has blown up in popularity and the insane amounts of irresponsible breeding going on out there, that's something that I want to put out. We're sharing about IVDD. We're sharing about DM. We're sharing about all the other known issues in corgs. If you have a corgi that is experiencing skin issues that looks like yeast infections, where they're losing patches of skin, they're tired all the time, they're unable to go on walks or exercise, they have difficulty eating, they have difficulty chewing, they're throwing up after they eat or coughing and choking from drinking water, go and get a blood test done and find out whether or not their CK levels are elevated. Because if the CK levels are elevated, there's a possibility they might have dermatomyositis.
So that's how it's diagnosed. That's how it's diagnosed, is by the CK level blood work and symptom presentation?
It's the CK levels that would be the first indicator to determine whether or not they should do a muscle biopsy. The muscle biopsy is what will help you get a definitive diagnosis. Okay. But it's, if you have the elevated CK levels with all of those other symptoms, absolutely get them in and push for a test, because that is something that can be very, very easily treated with prednisone. With steroids and immunosuppressants, that is something that can be treated. So it's not known. That no, whoever hears about dermatomyositis and corgis.
Yeah.
No, this is you are educating me, and this is not something that I've been familiar with.
I don't think it's common. Like it's definitely rare, but it is something that I wouldn't be surprised if it became more prevalent in the future with the boom of the breed.
So,
because you know,
and it affects other breeds as well, right? I'm assuming.
I'm assuming it does affect some other breeds, but I don't know because I haven't dived into other breeds. It was entirely corgis that I was focusing on at the moment.
Of course,
and you start somewhere. So, like DM, is there a genetic test of the mama and the daddy before they start breeding?
That we know of. That I do not know. Oh, okay. We're gonna have to keep digging. So you mm-hmm. found out about this. You were working with a vet. I'm wondering if some of the vets that know about this, though, maybe we should have someone on.
I think there are some vets that knew because in diving deeper into it and looking, you know, just going across various veterinary clinics and hospitals and seeing what they offered, some of them actually did have dermatomyositis listed under Pembroke Welsh Corgis. So there are vets out there that do know about it.
Interesting.
And, yeah, that is interesting because DM is unfortunately very common, and it's not common for the vets to know very much about it. It's a paragraph in their entire repertoire of everything they have to learn. So they don't normally know. So thank you for educating us on that. Well, we don't want to keep you all night. So we'll try to make it succinct because we would love to have you back on if you can find time in future episodes, because there's so much we can talk about.
Yes.
But I wanted to ask you, what do you, a couple things. One, how has that changed over the years that you've been doing it?
It's the dogs we're taking in has completely changed. When we first started, we were taking in mostly seniors and special needs medical issues, as I mentioned. So dogs that were typically, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, 11 years old, those that were approaching end of life. And then now we're getting dogs from the shelters with bite histories as young as 6 months, a year old, 2 years old. And it's been over the last 5 years or so, 4 to 5 years, that it's been mostly younger dogs under the age of 5 with a bite history. So it's completely shifted from, you know, older dogs with medical issues to now younger dogs with behavioral issues. And with dogs that have a bite history from the shelter, the ones from the shelter, those dogs are not adoptable to the general public. Right. They are rescue only. And so if a rescue chooses to take a dog that has a bite history, that's the only way that dog is getting out of that shelter. If the dog does not get rescued by a rescue that will take a bite history, that dog is going to be euthanized at the shelter. And I think it is so important for all owners to understand that if you have a dog with a bite history, that dog is not going to be able to be adopted out. And with that, I also need to add in, that should not be something that anybody should ever withhold. It should never, ever be information that you withhold. You need to be in full disclosure of every behavioral issue that your dog has if you are going to give them up. Because especially if they have bitten somebody, if you're in the fantasy land of thinking that, you know, my dog is biting my family and so they need to go somewhere else, those behaviors are not going to magically disappear. Those behaviors are going to show up in the next household. So not only are you doing the irresponsible thing for that dog, you are also doing the irresponsible and dangerous thing for the next human being in their life. And the only way to be able to help that dog is to be able to change what you are doing at home and understand how you created this problem to begin with. You know, of course, genetics can sometimes be a component, but a majority of what I see is behavioral stuff from lack of leadership, lack of leadership. And with that, Candy, though, I see you pointing at yourself, but I don't want you to ever think to yourself, like, I'm being a bad owner or, you know, everybody starts from a beginning place and you work your way up.
Yeah, no, I'm pointing to myself. I had to make the journey. So that's what I'm saying. And I continue to make the journey. So I'm pointing to myself to say, as a person who's had, you know, some dogs growing up and then cats and everything, and I consider myself a compassionate person and a smart person, and I had to make the journey. So it's it's,
you understand the perspective.
I understand the perspective. That's what it, yeah. And, you know, I make the journey. You want the dog, make the journey. And even, mm-hmm. even a dog that is, you know, perfectly bred and, you know, perfectly behaving and perfectly, all of those things,
which is subjective.
Mm-hmm. Make the journey yourself, make the journey of making yourself a better person.
And don't be defensive.
And don't be just
mm-hmm. that was the conversation you and I had is you said, well, I don't know why he does X, Y, Z. And then he would yell at you and you would yell that, and like, don't yell at him because all you're doing is matching that energy, you know, things like that. You didn't take offense to that. You said, Oh, okay. He doesn't think like that. You know, you have to take that approach.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And you know, you don't yell at a newborn like that. You don't yell at a toddler like that.
Yeah.
You got a toddler. Some people do. Some people.
Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast, but, and a whole other show.
Right. But for anyone joining on our 100th episode, if you haven't before, the history is Digby was my foster. He's not a rescue in the sense of he was unadoptable. He came from a family that was older and they had some medical issues. And I think also he's, you know, his personality, he was kind of a lot for them with everything that they had to do. So I took him in and I thought he was going to stay with me until he met Kat and they really bonded and he became Kat's emotional support after the loss of her husband. So now Digby has been living with Kat. How long has it been now? 3 years?
It's been three years.
And they've been going through my training program, Kat and Digby. And you guys are doing great.
We are.
Yeah. So.
Yay.
Anyway, to segue. So before we let you get back to so many things that you have to do, can you tell us what do you wish everyone would know about Queen's Best, about rescue, about corgis? You know, your choice. What can we share that we wish that dear viewer, dear listener would know? Another loaded question. Yeah.
Let's see. What would I like them to know about Queen's Best? That we're doing the best that we can. I know there are a lot of people out there that have put in applications and have not been able to adopt from us. And it's not that you're bad homes. It is that our dogs are not the right match for you. What I would like for them to know also is that we're always in need of help. So anytime you are thinking about getting a corgi or interested in it, volunteer first. Learn about why these dogs are being given up, because there's a good chance that you're going to encounter these problems yourself. And if they do come into your life and you encounter these problems, are you going to work through them? If the answer is no, then probably not a good idea to get one.
Right. I was going to say, is your training available online? Can anyone see it?
We have the basics of the rules that are available online. I always start with the fundamental 5 rules, which is doorway boundaries, crate training, loosely structured walk, polite wait for food, and reinforcing only calm behavior. So you can find those videos on our IGTV as well as on Facebook. But we do offer a 2-day workshop at the ranch. Yay. And that basically covers the rules and the boundaries on the first day, and then how to implement all of that in the household as well as household issues the second day.
Excellent. Great. And I will share those links in the description box of this video on YouTube as well as for our audio platforms. Awesome. So that anybody wants to find out how you can get involved, be it for potential fosters as well as any other questions you have about the training and behaviors.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah. So it's what I'd want people to know as corgi owners is rules and boundaries. First and foremost, rules and boundaries change the way you're doing things at home. They're really, really easy things to shift. And they benefit and impact the dogs in such a great manner, as well as your own life. Once you really start to implement them,
they need a leader.
They really, truly do. They need a leader. They need a leader. They need a den. They need lots of exercise and lots of walks and stimulating exercise, not one where they are pulling you along to every single tree and bush to pee. They need you to literally walk them, not them walk you. So implementing, you know, you mentioned, that you teach basic obedience. And I remember when I did basic obedience with my dog and walked out of class thinking, great, I did a basic obedience class. My dog is trained. And leaving thinking, my dog is trained. But are you taking those trainings and implementing it into life?
Practice, you know? Practice, practice.
Exactly, exactly. You know, so I think back to who was I 13, 14, 15 years ago. That was absolutely my mentality. And so it's anybody that is teaching their dog things, figure out how to implement it into life. Make your dog work for what they're doing, work for what they're earning. It fulfills them.
Yes,
so. It does. It does fulfill them.
Yeah, very fulfilling to them. And I always preach about, you were talking about the exercises. There are many different types of exercises for your dog. So you mm-hmm. have not only the physical, which they need it, we all need it, but they also need to have their mental, mentally yes. stimulated and even emotional stimulation. And that mm-hmm. looks different for each dog. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's not cuddles. Sometimes exactly. it's they want you to toss the ball for them, or they mm-hmm. want to go on a walk with you, or go mm-hmm. on an adventure with you, or a car ride. A lot of it mm-hmm. is learning your dog and what motivates them and what fulfills them.
Yes.
Yeah. And sometimes it's even challenging them back when they're pushing boundaries. It's like, is my person going to let me push this boundary and let me get away with it? Here's a way of now challenging them and letting them know, no, I'm going to hold you accountable. That mentally stimulates them. That mentally challenges them too, as well as physically challenges them.
Yeah.
Like a teenager.
Yeah.
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 I always say corgis are toddlers. Like I love that you said the autistic, nonverbal. I never thought about explaining it that way. That makes perfect sense. But I always say they're toddlers. The corgis are not a dog for you if you want a quiet background dog. This is mm-hmm. one that they need your stimulation. They need their partners. They need your partnership. They need your interaction. They, you know, like we're talking about my ADHD and how that really does well for me, that I mm-hmm. I need the constant shift. Oh, we're doing this now. We're doing walkies. Now we're playing ball. Now we're doing, you know, whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that you put it that way. Autistic children. That is a good way to put that for sure.
Very autistic kids.
Well, happy 10th anniversary. Again, we appreciate you so much. We appreciate your organization so much.
Thank you. And happy 100th episode.
Thank you. Yes. Yay. And dear listener, dear viewer, please check out the website. I will drop it down into the description box. You can check out the trainings that are available. Also, maybe make a donation. It is a 10-year anniversary. And also any ways that you can get involved. Susan, thank you so much. I know you have a full plate. It means a lot to us that you came and joined us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yes.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Take care.
What a great 100th episode.
Yes. And I put up my 2024 Sploof calendar.
Splooters. They do have a new calendar. Splooters. So you go to the website, I believe you can get from the website, the Splooters calendar. We got it at Corgi Beach Day.
We did get it at Corgi Beach Day. And I am in love. Yeah. Love with Piglet.
And Piglet.
Piglet is so adorable. They are all adorable. And
what month was Piglet? Stories.
Piglet is January.
January.
Yeah.
That's the one that's on January. Okay. I haven't put it up yet. So it's technically it's January. I need to get with it. What was that about ADHD? Keep up, Candy.
That's right. That's right.
Well, anyway, we hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Please go to the Queen's Best website. Again, I will drop the website in the description box. See how you can get involved. Also learn some things. Might help you at home with your training, with your corgi. And we thank you for joining us on our 100th episode. We couldn't do this without you. Please like, subscribe, share. The more we have you, the more we're able to keep doing this.
That's right.
So we are here for you every Thursday, all things corgi and pet parent lifestyle. Candy and Chuckles.
Cat, Digby.
Booger and Mortimer.
Little booger over there. And Mortimer. She's just so adorable. I wish you could see her. Just all cuddled up.
And she rules the roost. She all 16 roost. Pounds of the tiny right. lady. Well, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Bye.